Welcome to the Deadite Bites podcast. We are covering the Starz Channel series, Ash vs. Evil Dead. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Em.
And I'm your host, Paul.
Tonight, we are covering Season 1, Episode 4, entitled Brujo, directed by David Franz, or Fraz, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, written by James Egan, and produced by Taproot Ramey and Campbell, as usual. Another great episode in a string of great episodes. This one's bringing it a little bit deeper. We're getting some more push forward and seeing things that we haven't seen before. Like, we finally get to see the actual, you know, what the thing that was always chasing Ash around actually looks like in a physical manifestation. I thought that was pretty cool.
The draft.
The draft, as he called it. Yeah, we're being drafted.
Well, we got a lot of, like, biscuits this episode, you know what I mean? It's like they gave us a little bit of like everything kind of I wanted to see, and then even just a little bit more. So it was good. I mean, and we got a lot of good story in this one, you know.
And as an added bonus, we get to make fun of our home state. Yay.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think everybody in the country does anyway, though.
Yeah, it's
even though they
bad.
Live in some states that really, really don't
Shouldn't
give
be
them too much of a leg to stand on.
Well, I mean, I think this one, we get the most information about Ash, and we get more information about Ruby. I mean, it was really good, this episode, plus all the usual action and demons and everything else. I mean, I think this might be my favorite episode so far.
Really?
Yeah. Mm.
We got some answers about what happened with the demon when Kelly hit it. So I'm pulling back on my idea about her being Ash's daughter at this point.
Yeah.
And then we got also, they took us straight to the answer inside him that they were referencing last episode, which I guess is Eli.
Yeah, so
Eli's his guide to the answer anyway.
It was probably the most varied episode so far as the different themes that were running through it and the changes of scenery and stuff like that. Because one of our listeners pointed out last week how it was very economical to have that whole episode from last week take place in a bookstore. But here you get, it's really just taking place a little bit on the road and then at Pablo's uncle's house. But mm-hmm. it's pretty varied in the scenery with the whole trip and everything. So, mm-hmm. All right, should we get into recap?
Absolutely.
Well, we have some feedback that's commenting on last episode. And it's from Anthony, which I'll read later. When we get to the feedback section, but I want to go ahead and institutionalize the Anthony rating system, which is if you want to give it so many points, like 8 out of 10 points, we're going to say 8 out of 10 Lori dolls, the demonic Lori dolls. So I do give this episode 8 out of 10 demonic Lori dolls.
How many Lori dolls are you giving it, Paul?
Oh, I'd go 10 out of 10 on this one. I'm not even going to lie. I think it was perfect.
I'm doing 9 Lori dolls for this one.
Good. All right. Let's move on.
All right. On to the recap. All right, the opening scene is really just a smooth transition from the previously on section, which they don't label it as such, but it fits conveniently, and the scene just keeps going from where it was at. I really like that. That's mm-hmm. an awesome touch. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but when Fisher is, you know, trying to drag the gun towards her with her boot, you can see the magazine clip is not fully loaded. And then when she grabs it, I had to watch it like 3 times to catch it. But what she's doing is all in one motion. She pushes it in with her fingers and then just starts firing at him.
Oh, wow.
That is super smooth.
Nice.
But it's not enough because she's against the Deadite and she doesn't know that you got to do a headshot, kind of like a zombie. So,
which they don't actually do a headshot.
They don't do headshots, but they decapitate him. And then they find...
Yeah, and then she stomps his head.
Yeah, you shoot at the neck or... Yeah, that's true. Because I'm trying to remember if they did headshots to the if Fisher did headshots to that first zombie that we saw in the first episode. Mm-hmm. I can't remember now. But I do know that you got to decapitate him and then do something with the head. So a headshot might not be good enough. The head might have to be severed as well. Of course, her shooting's not good enough, and the Deadite bookseller has her own gun pointed at her head and says, "Looks like you get to kill another cop after all." So the tip 20%, you just got served. So the Deadites are keeping up this whole psychological warfare that they started in the other episodes, being mouthy and kind of getting into people's minds. That's a nasty touch when you think about it. You have this demonic thing that's coming at you trying to rip you limb from limb, and it could pull stuff from your head that you don't want to hear it say. Right as she's about to get done in, enter Ruby.
Like a boss.
So she comes in and she takes care of this thing in pretty quick fashion. And we already know that she has experience fighting Deadites from who knows how long, you know. So you figure she was probably like, what, maybe a late teens, early 20 something, 30 years ago, whenever that happened.
Yeah.
You think?
Give or take. Yeah.
Give or take.
I mean, how old was Ash? You figure same thing, late, mid, early 20s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think he was going to community college or something like that. Because in Army of Darkness, you could see books, like school books that are college level in the back of his car.
Nice. Yeah, I'd say late teens for sure then.
So Ruby saves the day, and what I'm coming to expect is going to be regular Ruby fashion. And she says, I'm your new best friend.
She doesn't explain like her background yet, right? She just kind of dispatches of the Deadeye and cuts to the next scene. Yeah, so I mean, it's awesome knowing that she survives. But like y'all said last episode, it's obvious what's going to happen, you know? So it wasn't like it was a shocker. It was still cool. I liked the way they did that Deadeye. The glass was a nice touch.
I like seeing her kick ass. I watched the Xena episode last night just because.
We watched two, actually.
Yeah.
Just because.
Nice.
Old Ares had a farm. Mm-hmm. So the three amigos are traveling down a country road, and Kelly, obviously not feeling too well, has Ash pull over so she can puke. At this point, he seems to be very concerned about the clear coat on his Delta.
Now, when he talks about his clear coat, is this where he yells how many payments he has left?
12.
No, that's a little later on.
That's a little later?
Yeah. Well, it's basically the same scene, but it's just a little further on.
Yeah.
that's hilarious because you got to figure he says he only has 12 payments left. He's still got to pay for a year on this car that's from 1973. And regardless of when he bought it, it's got to be at least 30 years ago. So.
That's awesome.
Who pays on a car for 30 years? That's not a payment. That's a mortgage. So he says, this is, I've got a couple of quotes that are in the running for Metal Mike's quote of the episode. And my first one, I'm not sure which I'm choosing yet, but my first one up is, well, folks, we're eating a real shit sandwich now. They start to get chased by the force from the forest, and we finally get to see what it looks like. This, to me, really brought a little bit of extra depth to this episode because it's upping the ante, and it's showing you something that belongs in the Deadite universe, kind of like the demon from last episode that can't be dispatched real easy with a chainsaw or a shotgun or a smart-ass quote.
Right.
This is something that's like, especially when you see that car that they go by and it gets tossed in the air, this is some serious shit. How do you fight that? How do you combat that?
Well, there has to be a reason why the Deadites are so cocky. They've been, even since like Evil Dead movies, it's like they have some force behind in the back of them up. So now we're actually seeing it.
But only a little bit, I guess, I'm assuming, can be let out at a time. Until maybe now, maybe he just really said the wrong shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's overkill too, though. If you did it all the time, then you wouldn't need Deadites. You would just need the smoke monster, you know? So...
smoke monster. It's,
resentment's been building up over time. This is what this is.
I just thought it was awesome that we finally, you know, because you instantly connected to all three of the movies, and it's like sweet. Because otherwise, I always kind of imagined like this invisible thing running after him, you know? Now it's got a little sustenance.
Sustenance.
Who knew that the smoke monster from Lost was also Deadites?
It's a crossover thing. Oh, Deadites on the Lost Island. We could go off on a really long tangent about that we'll just cut short right here.
Yes.
So the evil spirits start to possess Ash's car ahead of the smoke, and he's pounding on the dash. This made me laugh. He's pounding on the dashboard with his good hand. He's like, "Get out of here! 12 more payments, and she's mine."
He's like, "My car." They're all, and he's trying to keep everybody calm, like, no biggie, I got this, it's cool.
Well, seeing him beat on the dash, it seemed like Bruce Campbell, the actor, was taking pleasure in that, especially after listening to the Smodcast, how much he hates that car. I think he was like, oh yeah, I get to hit the shit out of this car. I'm really going to do it.
We'll talk about the what we heard on the Smodcast a little bit later on and direct you guys over to that. So you should listen to it for yourself for sure. But it was really funny. Kevin Smith moderated a panel at a Comic-Con in New York, was it?
And yeah, New York Comic-Con. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they screened the first episode to these people that were in the crowd, and they didn't know it was going to happen. And then they had a Q&A session with them afterwards, and Sam Raimi was talking about how he has to keep the car away from Bruce Campbell because he tries to take a little piece of it, you know, just break something off every single time.
That's awesome.
So here we get something that I never thought would happen. We get almost what I would see as a Mad Max reference. Because he said, you know, Kelly's in the back seat yelling, you know, do something. Let's get the hell out of here. He's like, oh, I'm going to do something. And he has Pablo hit the nitrous button on a car that's carrying
his Oldsmobile.
On an Oldsmobile carrying his trailer behind it.
See, it's funny. I thought Millennium Falcon because it's just like. Rrr, 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 rrr.
That's probably
failing to go to light speed.
Yeah, that's probably a more apt comparison, you know, and then Ash would be like, well, it's not my fault. So it breaks down, as all Oldsmobiles will do at one point or another, because I've owned one before. It wasn't a Delta, you know, 88, but it was
a Cutlass, wasn't it?
It was 98. Sorry, Delta 98. It was an Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme. And you just get them past 15 or 20 years of their lifespan, and they're just no good anymore.
Supreme means it comes with sour cream.
Yeah. You have to pay extra for that.
Rusty sour cream. I was for sure we were going to lose the trailer. You know, like the smoke monster was going to come up and just snatch the trailer off. It was like, do it. But it didn't. It's all right.
I think that's going to be their headquarters for a little while. You know, that's going to be where they work out of. Of course, I mean, at this point, they're going to have to get the car fixed to get anywhere, because that thing was just running on, you know, it probably didn't have any oil left and any.
And I was pleased to see that they had Pablo's bike on the back of that, because, you know, that may be the backup vehicle they need when they're all else fails. All three of them on it.
All three, like Scooby-Doo.
They play a song from the 60s. Instead of the Allman Brothers, it'll be like, you know. Da-na-na-na-na.
I do like that Allman Brothers song that they played in it, though.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite by them.
They're doing really good with the soundtrack work on this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They are saved by the talismans on the Brujo's property that Pablo's uncle keeps up to do just that, to ward off the evil spirits, to fight the darkness. And so it just kind of dissipates against this wall, which is a really good, I hesitate to use the word subtle use of CGI, but that's what springs to mind. I liked it. It looked really cool.
It's like it repels it. It's like it hits and then it goes up this invisible wall.
Yeah, it was visually frustrating. It looked like it was pissed off. I mean, if a bunch of wind and rocks and dirt can look pissed off.
I like the talismans he's got. It's like a bunch of baby doll heads, and it's pretty funny.
So just as before they pull all the way up to go see his uncle, Kelly winces and puts her hand to her head. And just kind of, you could tell she's in pain. And then we cut right to Ruby back with Fisher saying, a demonic spirit enters the body and they become that, as she points to the bookstore owner. So it's a nice little bit of foreshadowing about what's going on with Kelly at that point.
Nice. I didn't even catch that.
In during a conversation with Fisher, Ruby divulges her identity and why she wants Ash. The Deadite claims to know who she is, but gets decapitated before he can say it. Do you think Ruby was hiding something? I thought that at first, but then I thought about it again, and I was like, well, maybe she was trying to keep the Deadite from completing his sentence, you know?
It seemed like she was just tired of hearing him talk. Like,
I think
she's
right.
Just over it.
I think you're right, because she cut off his head, and then it was still able to talk before she stomped on it. So I guess it would have said whatever it was going to say then. But so I'm thinking that the Deadites have to completely pull stuff from their victims' heads all the time. Because right after Ruby says, let's go, it's Fisher. She says, let's go get this motherfucker, talking about Ash. She says that to Ruby. And then the Deadite head says, your end is near, motherfucker. Almost like it was parroting her. Like it was trying to say motherfucker in the exact same way she said it. And then Ruby steps on its head. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but the eyeball pops out.
A lot of popping eyeballs this episode.
So we're back with the gang again, and on the way up to Pablo's uncle's house, that looks like it's right out of a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, with all the shit that's hanging everywhere. We get a little backstory on Pablo. Apparently he was apprenticed to his uncle, but he left to do great things, which involved working at the value stop, apparently.
Well, that wasn't the intent.
No, that wasn't the intent, but that's where he ended up.
I like how Ash kind of sticks up like, whoa, 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 it's not that bad, man.
Man, you were head of electronics department. That's big time.
That's a pretty big deal. So when they finally meet his uncle, who is the Brujo that they've been talking about, he's played by a gentleman named Hemke Madera. And he's been in The League. He's been in Burn Notice along with Bruce Campbell.
Mm-hmm. Well, I watched The League, but I don't think I've seen him in it, though. Hmm.
And he was also in a movie, funnily enough, called El Jefe. So
that's awesome.
There's that. But
just a quick recap on the scene before. Now, when Ruby's talking about her family, so she's after Ash because she blames him for the death of her family.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like she's missing a piece somewhere, because we touched on it last episode and we talked about that's exactly what she's going to think, and she's kind of fulfilling our expectations in this sense. She thinks that Ash killed every one of her family and then just left the cabin. I don't know why she
even
would believe that.
If you dealt with these deadites before, wouldn't you automatically think that, or does she think that he said the words and that's what brought him back and then that's what killed everybody? So that's it then.
Possibly. She could blame him for saying the incantations in the book, because if she went to the cabin, she would know that a human being didn't do that to other human beings. Mm-hmm. He didn't turn them into deadites.
Because it seems weird that she would just now be looking for him. If she's blaming him for killing her family, why does she wait till he does something stupid, like say the words and then come after him, right? Because there's been 30 years. Does it take her 30 years to find him?
Like, if you've dealt with these deadites before, obviously, like she has, wouldn't you just kind of expect that they had a lot to do with the killing of her family because of her dad having the book, and Ash didn't kill her parents, you know, but of course she's going to think that. I don't know. I think the Deadeye might have possibly went trying to reveal something, because there's definitely something we don't know about Ruby, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Well, the answer to why she just started looking is actually in this episode, and I'll describe it when we get to it. As to Paul's question, I really don't know. I mean, it does seem like the Deadeye's probably hiding something. There is an extra dimension to Ruby's character that we're unaware of.
Yeah, because the last episode, they talk about you have to be either evil or stupid to use the book. So what about her dad? Was her dad evil for using the book? Because he wasn't stupid. He was a professor. So I think maybe there's something to that family we don't know.
He had book smarts. Yeah. Doesn't mean he had common sense.
That's true. That's true.
Mm. I guess you could say ignorant in the sense of being a fool, in the classic use of the word, to where it's somebody with good intentions who does a crazy, stupid thing. But anyway, okay. Pablo admits to being wrong when he meets his uncle, because his uncle's not really happy to see him there or to see Ash, because I think he has an inkling of who he is right away, because he says, you know, you quit your training, but then you'll bring this one up here. And Pablo tries to convince him that this is one of the jefes that is destined to fight evil. You know, this guy's going to help save the world, which seems pretty unlikely if you don't know Ash. I mean, I wouldn't believe that if I had never seen the other movies and just started watching this series, I'd be like, this guy's not going to be able to do shit. Think about if this is your first impression of him.
Oh, for sure. I wouldn't believe it either, man.
So the Brujo feels out Ash's aura and tells him his flame is weak. And he gives him a laundry list of negative attributes that kind of reads like all the opposites of the values in the Boy Scouts. You know, you go down the list of values that you're supposed to be, like thrifty and brave and smart and courageous and all this other stuff. Everything's the opposite. You can hear him trailing off in the distance as they focus on Kelly. It's like, you're selfish, you're lazy, you're weak, all this other stuff. So we get to probably what is going to be my Metal Mike's quote of the episode. And he says, well, thanks for the opinion. Appreciate it. And now you can take it, turn it sideways, and shove it right up the old poop chute.
Did you guys think that it was convenient that he couldn't detect anything in Kelly, or is it just like a limitation of his powers? I mean, we could just explain it as that.
Well, the thing is, I think I kind of looked at it like the demon is hiding inside of her, you know, so maybe because that it got past the wards, you know what I mean? So if it can get past his talismans and everything else, what's to say that it couldn't hide deep inside of her? And then once it got past and in, then it manifested itself when it knew it was in a safe place.
Well, she reacted strongly to that creepy sculpture, whatever you want to call it. Talisman. For sure.
I think it's all about the timing. I think it had to be weak enough in her system to be able to make it past the wards and not let the force get past it, but strong enough to be able to grow once, like Paul said, like once she was inside. But yeah, there might be a little bit of convenience and plot device going on there. But he does tell Pablo, he goes, the girl is ill, tend to her. So he knows something's wrong. It could be just as simple as looking at her physically and seeing that she looks worn out and a little bit sick.
It's his machismo immediately discrediting a female.
I mean, it could be. You never know. It's definitely a huge mistake on their part. And then maybe when the demon's in control, that's why he uses Kramer Jr. to really set him off. Like, hey, look, your nephew's fucked up. Go check him out. And you got Ash over there in the state that he's in. So, you know, maybe it's just a cunning demon.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking the demon's just playing his cards right. Or he could be sexist, you know.
I think it's both.
Not the demon, but the uncle. So Kelly is hearing voices, and she's being thoroughly freaked out by the sculptures on the Brujo's land. I have to say that this actress is doing, Dana De Lorenzo is doing an exceptional job of being anxious and fearful this whole episode. She really pulls it off.
She's hot when she's got those demon eyes.
Yeah, yeah, she's hot anyway, but when she gets the, especially at that last scene. No.
Yes, yeah. Especially. No? Especially
you don't think when the demon eyes are not hot.
Oh, they were hot on her.
Yeah, they don't work on everybody.
They don't work on anybody.
But with her, it does work. So the Brujo takes Ash inside to, quote, look inside him, which apparently does not include a prostate check. Ba-dum-tsh. As he makes a concoction that apparently contains worms, Ash lets him know that he wants to undo whatever I done did. So the Brujo has some of the best lines here, and he calls him adult, you know, and Ash is like, is that a good thing? And he says that, you know, he's basically telling me, he's like, but that's okay, because that kind of ignorance is really what's keeping you alive at this point. You know, you know, they say that that's a quality of people who are truly ignorant. They can just sometimes walk through life and not have all the worst shit happen to them because they're oblivious to it. And people who are smart and looking out for it sometimes get over paranoid and second guess themselves and walk right into a wall. He has another one of his good quotes, and he says, you feel like people underestimate you. And he says, well, they wind up dead or in my bed.
And he looks at him waiting for a reaction, and the guy's like, ugh.
He says, well, he tells his reaction is basically your total lack of self-awareness will make very difficult to find the answers you seek.
Yeah, that was, he looks at him with this sly smile on his face when he says that too. That was one of my picks. But
do you already have your quote? Do you know what it is? Are you going to wait?
Oh, yeah, I've got it.
Okay, cool.
For sure.
So it turns out what he's drinking is called ayahuasca. Have you heard of this before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's what, in South America, they use it for spiritual healing. And you can break it down. It's pretty much DMT inside of it. Mm-hmm. So the ayahuasca is more of the herbal form where they take the bark of this tree and they boil it down. And then, I mean, I've watched a few documentaries on it. It's pretty cool.
Hmm. So it's a real thing.
Like, oh, absolutely, 100%.
Oof.
I mean, even people with like, I mean, all kinds of people are going. There's like, I mean, it's a pretty big trend going on right now for people going down with like, you know, all kinds of mental issues and physical. They go down and they take these trips with these shamans, and they actually feel like they've released some of their demons. Joe Rogan and a lot of his podcasts talks about DMT, and
I was gonna bring
it's
him
really
up.
Interesting. They call it the God molecule.
I've heard of that before. Okay, all right. Now I have heard about this stuff before. I'm just making that connection now. I didn't realize that it was in reference to that. And apparently, to Ash, it goes down smooth. So in the meantime, Pablo has a plan to make a more modern hand for Ash, and Kelly just keeps feeling worse.
I loved that about Pablo. That just made me so happy when he was like, we're going to make Ash a hand. That guy is so cool.
Yeah.
Inspector Gadget hand at that.
Yeah.
It looked like one of those old school Nintendo things that you would use to control a game.
Yeah, that was the Power Glove.
Okay, that's what it was.
But because a tamed down version of it. The Power Glove was a little bigger.
Huh. Okay, yeah, that makes sense because Kelly, when he shows her the box, Kelly's just like, I don't think this is the right time to be playing video games. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So this next scene is pretty pivotal to this episode and the whole season, really, because Fisher and Ruby are coming out of the Books from Beyond place, and she's like, hey, I've got his wooden hand. She makes a comment of like, why would he pick wood? He can't even get it wet. But, you know, she's like, maybe we can track him, you know, talk about, or I could, you know, tap somebody from the Force to try to get me some information on amputees. And Ruby pulls out her big reveal, and she's like, oh, we won't need to. And this is why I think that Ruby was only recently able to track Ash down, because the hand has been dormant for 30 years and it just started twitching. So it probably just started twitching whenever he said him and the girl with the arm tattoos were getting high and drunk, and they said the incantations from the Necronomicon, and that's when it started twitching because it could get a location on him. That's my theory.
Now, when Ash sees the hand, is he going to freak out? Is he going to be pissed, or is he going to be happy?
He's going to be pissed because he thought he killed that thing in part two, for sure.
I can't wait. When I saw the hand, I was so fucking happy. It was like, oh my God, that's awesome.
Totally unexpected. There's going to be a good 10-minute Three Stooges battle between the two of those, him and his hand. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a rematch, and it's going to be fucking awesome, and I can't wait for it. So the trip starts.
And it's a pretty genius. Oh, I'm sorry. It's genius idea for them to bring the hand back and use it like a compass. I mean, that's fucking. Kudos to the directors and the writers and everybody.
And it creates suspense for us because what's going to happen when they do meet up? When they're reunited.
And that's another thing too, because here's a good question to think about. Ruby goes back to the cabin at some undetermined time. We're guessing somewhere around 30 years ago. How does she find that hand? How does she even know it's there to be found? So there has to be something that's going on between her and the Deadites. I'm not saying they're in league with each other, but there's been some sort of sharing of information at some point.
Yeah, because how does she know about the chicken bone hand or the chicken bone knife?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got a lot of information and she's playing this victim, albeit a badass victim.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, Lucy Lawless is tough as nuts in this, but it's I just think there's definitely more to her that it's going to be, you know, maybe she turns into a villain at the end of the season for the next season, or I just don't know, because I don't see how the two groups are going to work with each other.
Yeah, I mean, eventually they're probably going to have to if all of them are going to make it to season two. But we don't know if that's the case.
Nah, someone's dying this
season. Yeah, this show will definitely do it. So Ash's trip starts as the Brujo blows smoke into Ash's face, and he starts to, you know, he's going through all the trippy stuff. And I've never tripped on acid or anything like that, so I don't know how realistic this is, but it seems pretty cool. It seems pretty out there. And he's looking at the eyeball in his mouth and stuff like that.
And I think Brujo blows smoke into Ash's face as a way to enter Ash's mind. It's his own pathway so he can enter Ash's mind. And then Ash sees the eyeball in the Brujo's mouth, and it's like it's the Brujo's third eye.
Oh,
I like that. So. Yeah. I love that.
I like that too. That's really good. Yeah, that makes sense because he is in his mind the whole time.
Yeah.
He's there with him.
Because I think that's the purpose of the smoke. I don't think he was saying, I'm going to get high while I watch you trip. I think it was just like, that's why he kept blowing the smoke in his face, because that's his way of like entering into Ash's
head space. Way his chant sounded too. It sounded realistic.
I was trying to remember it because I watched the episode three times and then a little bit extra. I was going to try to remember it and do that as my stretch instead of data check, data chum. But
I was trying to remember, but the only thing that comes to my head is like an Om Shiva, you know? It didn't work.
So we get a trip down Ash's memories. Felix the Cat, I Dream of Jeannie, Flipper, Charlie's Angels, a few Playboys, memories from Evil Dead 1, a map of all the value stops he worked at in Michigan, and where he parked the Streamline trailer. If you notice, each one that popped up on the map, it had like the trailer park and the place where he worked. Monster trucks, beer, weed, and plenty of TNA. Yeah, baby. Then things start to turn not so nice when he wakes up in a grave with his eyes sewn shut, which I thought was a nice touch. And
awesome.
With the Brujo saying the key to looking inside yourself is to see without sight. And he stumbles around and he's hemmed in by what appear to be hooded zombies. And there's sound in the background. I don't know if you guys caught this or not from the original Evil Dead. It's a little bit processed and changed, but it's a conversation between him and Linda and some of the screams and everything
that was going on after she turned. I didn't catch that either.
So did you notice what some of these demons were wearing?
Yeah, it was like Ash's old outfits, wasn't it?
There's feedback on it. I was just making sure that you guys.
I took the zombies
it's
as
the blue shirt, the shirt he wears all the time.
Yeah. They're kind of like versions of him that are just. I think it's supposed to be representative of him just aimlessly stumbling around in the dark and not doing what he's
set to do. It's his inner demons.
Yeah, or it could be his inner demons as well.
Because
sometimes your inner demons can plague you by not fulfilling your potential, which could very well be the case in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So. The Brujo tells him to stop being a bitch.
Ash's response is great.
You're being a bitch, dude. Sounds like something a 15-year-old would say. But, you know, this could be the level of
it's arrested development for sure.
Yeah. So he opens his eyes and takes control finally, finding his spiritual center and his safe place, which turns out to be Jacksonville, Florida.
Did you crack up when you saw that?
Yes.
Yeah,
I did.
I loved it.
Oh man. Nobody
Trust me, if you've been to Jacksonville, it's not that great.
we live in Florida. If anybody hadn't figured this out already, you know, or didn't know already, not that it matters, but we live in Florida and nobody goes to Jacksonville on vacation. And I mean, nobody. Florida is full of destinations for vacations, just chock full of it. But Jacksonville is not on that list.
No.
If you've had a vacation in Jacksonville, we'd love to hear about it. But I just really, really don't think that happens. So the writers just, they got it good. Florida takes another one, another kick to the dick for us. So it turns out that he booked a vacation there 30 years ago, but he took a girl to a cabin and his life hasn't been the same since. The cool thing is here, he has two hands. And I don't know if this is because he's in a safe place, his spiritual center, but obviously this means he needs two beers.
Yes, this is where he says sweet shithouse mouse, right? That's my phrase of the week.
Sweet shithouse mouse?
Yes, I will use that curse. I have no issues. That's why I like it so much. I'll use that at work. I'll probably use it tomorrow. I mean, it's wonderful. It's so badass. Because what is a shithouse mouse? I mean, it's awesome. It's just awesome.
It just sounds cool because when you really dissect that one, you're like, I mean, it's just a mouse that hangs out in bathrooms.
And that's, I mean, that where a mouse has really just fallen low and it's scavenging on shit.
Yeah. It can't get its own food, so it's eating feces. I mean,
I love it. I love it. And then he double fists, which, you know, that's what Ash thinks. So it's good.
Yeah, you finally get your right hand back, and the first thing you're going to do with it is make sure you have a beer in that hand because you haven't had one in that hand for 30 years. Mm-mm. You know what the next thing he would do with it would be?
A boob. Yeah, but a boob.
A boob?
Oh.
Well, no, before that.
Masturbate.
Yes. So back to the streamline, and Pablo is having a blast constructing Ash a new hand. You know, it's good to know somebody who's good with that kind of stuff, because I'm no good with that kind of stuff. I wouldn't be able to create anybody a new hand. I'd be shit out of luck.
And they're smart because they write it in early in the episode when he's like, oh, you were in electronics. That's the top. And then we get to see him use that. So it's like, that's nice.
I didn't even make now that connection.
Now we know his place in the group. He's their, you know, guy that makes stuff for them.
So him and Kelly have a good conversation that's kind of lighthearted about Ash's hair color and not knowing who he's fooling with that. And
this is where my quote comes in.
He makes a good joke about the spray nozzle.
Maybe a spray nozzle with whatever hair dye he thinks he is fooling us with.
Is that your quote of the week?
Yes.
Is that your Metal Mic quote of the week? All right, that's cool.
My Metal Mic.
That's a good one. So Kelly's head gets worse and she goes into the other room and becomes fully possessed by the demon from the store. And when she comes up and she looks in the mirror and she sees it, Em had something to say about this.
I already said it. She's hot when she's got the black demon eyes.
That's not what we talked about earlier. You said it's like she's...
Oh, yeah. It reminds me of looking at Bob.
Yeah. One or two listeners might get that. But, you know, that's it. It did remind me of that. It reminded me of Leland looking in the mirror and Bob, but only after you said so. I didn't make the connection right away.
But she is hot with demon eyes. I don't know how many times I need to say it.
I like a little white in the eyes. You know? If my wife like rolled over in the middle of the night with those in, I'd just leave. Smack her and leave. I'm out. And like not because I would hit her, but that's demon eyes. I don't fuck around. I'm not like the people in these shows. I don't fuck around with demons. Fight or flight type thing. Yeah. And I would do both. And leave.
There's no or.
If she's a real demon, I need to get a lick in before I go. You know. Thank goodness she's not, and I would never hit her. So nobody take this as I beat women or anything.
Did it look like Kelly had fangs too, a little bit?
It did.
Yeah.
It did look like her teeth were a little bit sharp.
Well, I mean, it was just, you know, you guys touched on it earlier. She's such a good actress, and she really pulled everything out for the possession. I mean, it was awesome.
It'll be even better next episode, I imagine.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't let this stuff fester for too long. That demon's going to come out probably in the first couple of minutes of
I hope they don't kill her because of it.
No.
No, I don't think they will. Mm-mm. I think she's here to stay, or at least until the end of a season. They're not going to kill a major character like that. I mean, she's a marquee character. They won't do it. They won't do it in episode 5, I'll say that. All right, I don't believe
they will.
Usually
by episode 5, I've got somebody picked out that I want to die, so I haven't done that yet.
You're not going with Fisher?
Nah, well, yeah, I could, but I think she's got a big, she's got more coming.
I think
they wouldn't spend all this time on her.
I think she's got a good story arc to fulfill, so I hope it's not her. But I know it's not going to be Ruby, you know, at least anytime soon.
Or Pablo. No. Or Kelly.
Pablo or Kelly.
Or Ash.
So,
well, if you look at all of our characters, Kelly's really got, you know, she's...
No.
Her or the Bruja would be the one to go, because we don't know much about them.
The Brujaha?
Don't, no. Yeah, the Brujaha. You know, we don't know much. We don't know a lot about her. I mean, we do, but not as much as the other ones, you know, or even Pablo. But we see Pablo's, like, position in the group. You know, we see what now he's going to do. So maybe in the few episodes coming, we'll see what her job will be in the group. You know, I mean, other than being a badass.
All right. So she helps Pablo, helps in quotation, by plugging in a cord that she breaks as, you know, he's messing around with all his stuff, just shocks the crap out of him.
Not her, though.
It's not her. Yeah, you're right. It's the demon.
No, I'm saying it doesn't shock her, though, at all, even though her hand was on the actual break of the cord when she plugs it in. But I guess because she's that demon, she probably has some sort of protection.
Yeah, well, he's the joy buzzer demon, so electricity's not going to fuck with him.
Yeah.
All right, so back in Jacksonville, Ash talks to his lizard, Eli, and the beers disappear only to be replaced by the Necronomicon. And did you guys want to talk about anything that Eli says to him? I mean, there's a funny little exchange about him going, "Hey, yeah, I've always wanted to talk to you, but you're never going to say anything about what I do when I'm alone in the trailer, right?"
Yeah, that was awesome. And then, of course, in Ash fashion, he just tosses the fucking Necronomicon. The reason why you're there... And to figure out what's going on, he just throws it in the water like, meh, fuck off.
But he asks Eli, I always wondered if you're a boy or a girl, and Eli doesn't answer because whatever is speaking through Eli does not know that answer.
No, it's him. It's all in his head. He's speaking to himself.
Well,
so, again, he doesn't know the answer.
Yeah, so he doesn't know the sex of his lizard.
No, he doesn't.
So the takeaway here, though, that Ash needs to remember is that he must basically that he has to bury the Necronomicon deep beneath the place where your journey began, which is the cabin. So we're going to have to go back to the cabin at some point. So that's
I can't fucking wait.
Yeah.
Because we see it for a second in his acid trip at the beginning, right?
Well, actually,
he first takes the ayahuasca. Don't we just see it real quick, or is that early?
Well, there's
or now.
When the demon gets him.
Oh, you're right.
Well, he's in the cabin when the demon gets him, but you do see the cabin from
the
first
outside.
Evil Dead. Yeah, because it's going through his memories of him and Linda and stuff.
That's when he's like, this is not Jacksonville.
So before we get to that, though, Kelly diverts the Brujo towards Pablo Kelly diverts the Brujo towards Pablo so she, or it, can spend some quality time alone with Ash. Which, so we talked about this earlier about how, you know, he's still not noticing that something's up with her because it's like, hey, your nephew just got shocked half to death. You might want to go check him out. And he's like, all right, well, Ash is in a good place, so just watch him. And she goes, looks like she's about to get on his chest and start choking him. But,
it's like the, you know, have you ever seen a picture, like that medieval picture of the nightmare where it's a demon on the chest of the sleeper?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of a...
It does look, yeah. I didn't think about that, but it does look like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Jacksonville was apparently just an anagram for Surrender Ash. And now he's back in the cabin tripping donkey balls. So the demon is in his mind, but it's still his trip. So, which he's reminded by his lizard Eli that, hey, you've got control of this thing. So Ash proceeds to... all right, well, let me back up a little bit. He falls in the cabin, like he falls down through nothingness, it looks like, and he lands on a big box of little Lori dolls. And he gets up and he's like, oh shit, not you again. So his lizard, and then the other demon shows up, so he's just like, oh, I'm double fucked now. And then Eli the lizard shows up and he's like, hey, remember, this is your trip. This is, you know, it's all about you. So Ash pulls a Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors and takes control of the trip. I thought this was a direct nod to that. I might be a little off base on it, but just to take control and be like, hey, I'm in control now. And he squishes the head of the little Lori doll.
I love how he laughs. He's like,
yeah, and he just throws her over. Did you catch the little blood splat that goes on the lens of the camera, too?
Oh, yeah.
And her eyeballs popped, too. Popped her eyeballs. Brujo busted an eyeball in his mouth.
And I don't feel sorry for her at all.
I don't know.
Yeah. Screw little
I was expecting more of them. Like, he lands on a pile of them. I was like, oh, fuck.
There's
100 of these little dolls after him, but...
And they had to, Raimi had to throw in, well, it wasn't Raimi, but somebody had to throw in a little Three Stooges reference, like with the one little, you know, what are those pots called? Begins with a C.
Terracotta.
Terracotta, thank you. Terracotta pot had to smash on his head just out of nowhere. Where did that one come from? I guess it was flying in the air. But so he takes control of his trip, and after he squishes the head of the doll, he starts to pretty much put his hand out. Looks like he's got some sort of superhero powers, you know. But he's in real life, he's choking Kelly because that's the demon's vessel at this point. And you know, he's busting out the one-liners because, you know, that's just Ash. And
he's like, oh, you can't breathe? Well, that's the idea.
Dickwad.
Dickwad, yeah.
So Pablo and his uncle come to the rescue, and Pablo knocks Ash out using the, is it the mortar or the pestle? I always get him confused.
That's the pestle.
The pestle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would make sense. Because it begins.
So was
with
that
P.
The demon's plan to have Ash kill her? Or was it to kill Ash? Like, maybe he realized that he was losing, so he's like, fuck it. I mean, you're not going to choke a demon out. So maybe that was this, like, the backup plan. Like, I'll just have you choke her out, and then you're going to feel terrible.
Yeah,
you
know? That's another psychological thing, like warfare that Steve talks about.
Well, he doesn't, but that's not on Ash's part. It's done to affect the other people, because Pablo and his uncle are the ones that, like, the demon knows it can manipulate into saving, because they run in and see Kelly being choked, then...
Well, if the demon knew that was going to happen, but if Ash had succeeded in killing Kelly, he would still won in a way because Ash would have to live with the guilt of killing Kelly.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. So Pablo does the knocking out with the pestle, but apparently Kelly is still possessed. Wah, wah, wah. Free your mind and your ass will follow.
So what's going on with Ash now? If the demon is still in Kelly, but Ash is out of commission.
Well, you know, with the frame of mind that Ash was in... That the demon didn't go into Ash because he was in Ash's mind.
He was.
So how do you know he didn't transfer into Ash?
Because at the very end, you see Kelly's eyes turn dark again. So
That's right.
Now Ash is unconscious. So I think that the demon's still in Kelly and Ash is unconscious. So he's just dead to the world right now. Nobody's in his mind. He's not even in his mind.
No, yeah, that makes sense. I forgot about the end.
So this is like what the Brujo was saying. It could destroy your mind. The ayahuasca or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
However you say it. Did I say it right?
Ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca.
I'm no expert on that. So we got another good end to another great episode. And I can't believe that next week will be the halfway point all fucking ready.
I know.
That sucks.
I mean, are they going to have an episode this week with Thanksgiving on?
I would imagine because it's on a Saturday. It's not like, because usually they, well, maybe not. Maybe they won't.
Sometimes they don't on holidays.
No, they do because I went to IMDb to do some research on credits today, and they had a little schedule, and it said that Saturday the 28th was going to be the next episode. So as far as I know, at least as far as IMDb is concerned, they're thinking they're planning on having one.
Well, that's awesome.
All right, so should we talk about the Smodcast episode?
Yes.
So last week I listened to, you know, a couple of Kevin Smith's podcasts. I listened to Smodcast, Fat Man on Batman, and Tell Him Steve Dave. And on Smodcast, it was like a nice treat. Kevin Smith had a big thing at Comic-Con for Comic Book Men, and then he does panels and stuff, and he's a really good moderator usually. But he, on Saturdays when I get in the studio to work on stuff, I grab podcasts to listen to, and it was just a really cool thing because he's like, oh, welcome to Ash versus the Evil Dead, you know, he goes into his opening, and it's just so well done because I think everybody was there, you know. I would listen to it. You want to go into details? I'm sure you wrote down more points than that. I've only listened to it once, but...
I've only listened to it once. I didn't write anything down, but...
Yeah, I don't generally listen to podcasts. I talk on a lot of them, as it turns out, but I'm not a big podcast listener. But Paul recommended this one because it specifically had to do with the show that we're covering right now. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it, and it was great. I mean, they had everybody on the cast, and they had... Sam Raimi there, and it was just and the showrunner as well,
which we've not mentioned his name, Craig DeGregorio.
That's because you can't pronounce it.
DeGregorio.
Okay. DeGregorio.
And wasn't he the showrunner for Chuck?
Yeah, I believe so. I think.
Okay.
Yeah, which it's Smodcast episode 340. Groovy NYCC. So if you ever go on iTunes, you can look it up and listen to it. And they do. It's not too long. It's about an hour long.
Yeah, I think it's 52 minutes, I think, if I remember.
Mm-hmm. And mostly Q&A. And they go into, like, there's, like, some spoilery stuff in it a little bit. And then they go into, like, the car and everything else. So it's worth the listen for sure.
Yeah, it goes into Bruce Campbell hating the car, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's worth listening to that alone. Just to talk, like, just the back and forth between Bruce Campbell and Raimi sometimes
is. And he claims it wasn't Quick and the Dead, but I'm not sure if he's joking or not. Steve thinks he is.
I think he is because it's a Western, but I don't know.
Well, he said they. Go ahead.
Yeah, they use it for the frame of a wagon, which is awesome.
Hold on, think he was joking, or do you think.
I think it could be for real, just because, you know, some directors would do stuff like that, or producers also, because it could be a good luck charm for the guy. And when you've got that kind of money, why not use it?
Right.
Yeah, and it's his car, and he loves it, which I understand. You know, I've loved cars before, but I've hated cars too.
So I've hated.
I've hated and loved the same car.
Yeah, yeah.
I've only had two in my life, so, and I love both of them. Oh, they are both good to me.
I had one that I hated that died in your driveway of all places. So I totally understand the hate part of it.
I remember that.
Yeah, it sucked.
We get a little bit about Ruby Nobi, not too much.
She drops the bomb that she's and this was to a group of people who had just watched the first episode, and she just spills the beans completely, just knocks the jar over, and she's like, you know, she's after Ash because she thinks that Ash killed her whole family and is responsible for bringing these demons back, and et cetera, et cetera. And then there's a little bit of silence, and Ash says something to the effect of, Ruby's an idiot. She doesn't know what she's talking about.
Oh, man.
But anyway, we won't jabber on too much about it. We just wanted to mention it because we drew a little bit of material from it for this podcast. And you guys should go check it out because it directly relates to what's going on. And if you know, watch it before you see too many more episodes, it'll just a little bit of enrichment for the whole thing.
Yeah, just a way to extend your enjoyment of the series. Okay, so we're going to go into feedback now?
Yeah.
Feedback.
So before we go into feedback, let's say hi to Dunkin' Donuts, who's been listening to us, even though she's not watching the show.
What's up? Donuts.
That is awesome. Thank you very much. I feel special, actually, that somebody would listen to us without actually having watched the show. That is awesome. Thank you very much.
It's always nice to have you along, Donuts. And okay, so we're going to start off with an email from Anthony, who he wrote in, and this is actually commenting on last week's episode because he got it in after we had put up the podcast. So he says, hey, everyone, I love this Elagos demon character. It's the coolest thing I've seen on screen since anything in Hellraiser, including Pinhead. The flickering effects of Elagos' body made it all the more intense and is very similar to the effects used for the Nemesis on The Flash from the first season.
It is, and it's good. If you haven't watched Flash, it's awesome.
This was such amazing work by prosthetics designer Roger Murray. For my favorite line, I loved Ash's exchange with Pablo about churros and race. But for the practical effect, I'm choosing sounds like a lot of yapping and not enough happening. Finally, I'll give this episode 9.4 demonically possessed Little Lori dolls out of 10, with some extra credit given for the use of the Stooges' song Loose at the end. Keep up the great work, Anthony. So yeah, we got comments on music there too.
So that was a Stooges song at the end.
Yeah, of the last episode.
Okay.
He's even like doing like the fine points to 9.4, like not even 9.5, it's 9.4.
So 9 Little Lori dolls in her legs.
Yes.
Maybe. A couple toes.
But not all of them.
Not all of them. Okay, so next up we have Metal Mike. Hey, shippers, Metal Mike here. Even though I felt this episode was not as much fun as the first three, I still think it was great. Ash's trip was funny, too. Looks like Mr. Ashley is a fan of the Women of Wrestling Company. I myself have never heard of them, but I was able to catch the logo on the screen and looked up their wiki. The only thing I will mention is that they were founded in the year 2000, so if that helps with some sort of timeline for his visions, then so be it. Having Ash's hand in play is a nice surprise. I hope it goes after Pablo first. I have no theory or explanation as to why it would. I just think his character getting attacked would be the most comical. Who do you shippers think the hand will attack first? Will every character step into the squared circle with the iconic hand of Ash at some point?
It would be cool to see it, like, get away and then sneak up and hide. and maybe fuck with all of them a little as it goes. But I think the first one it'll go for is Ash.
Like it has its own agenda all of a sudden?
Yes, exactly. Kind of like it, you know, from the, like it would just, because that hand can sneak around and hide. And it's pretty disgusting. You know, so I could see it like going underneath some covers, you know, Ash thinking it's Kelly, you know, and he's like, oh, you know, he's like cavalously, hey, baby, you know.
Or Pablo's thinking that, actually.
Pablo, I mean, it could work anywhere, you know, it could work for her too. Like, Ash, get your fucking hands off me.
There's definitely going to be some comedic value that gets mined from the hand being around. But if when it comes to a one-on-one battle, I don't think the thing is subtle enough to actually go for other people to try to upset Ash to, you know, to kill his friends in front of him. It's just going to go straight for him. And just that's his nemesis. That's my opinion.
So the Metal Mike quote this week goes to Ash with, make sure you project it. Don't mess up the clear coat. I've also been told a similar thing, so that quote hits home for me. Until next time, Metal Mike from New Hampshire, out!
So thanks, Mike. And by the way, Mike is probably the only person who listens to this podcast who cares, but I just went to Atlanta to go see King Diamond this last Monday, and it was the best concert I've ever been to in my life. He played the entire Abigail album, plus about 7 other songs before it.
It was better than the 96 Backstreet Boys concert.
Way better. I even got backstage at that one. That's another story.
Backstage and then backstage.
That's what I meant by backstage.
Oh, okay. All right. Next up, Castle Grayskull, also Kane Shoddy Gray, in case you want to know his real name. But anyway. Hi, guys. Straight away, my Metal Mike quote of the week goes to Ash for, well, folks, we are eating a real shit sandwich now.
Excellent choice. Excellent choice, both of them.
You guys are quote brothers. The shaman must have powers as he has the gate blocked off. Kelly's necklace, they seemed to linger on it when she was laying down in the car. Not sure if I saw it on the other episodes. Maybe it's an item the demon needs to hold it in this plane.
I hadn't thought of that.
It's an anchor.
Well, I haven't even noticed it. I'm gonna have to go back and look. It could be.
I did notice her necklace, but I didn't think about anything having to do with the demon. I just thought, wow, it's interesting, you know, because I'm a female and I like to accessorize. But would I be accessorizing at times like that? I don't know. I don't know if I would think to put a necklace on if I was being chased by deadites. Probably not.
If it was like a pentacle or a cross, Star of David, then I would totally understand accessorizing. It would be all protection in my head. Like, what can I do to keep me from getting possessed? That's the first thing I would think the second I saw that fucking demon. I'd have all of them around my neck, like everyone. I'm just a one of these might work.
Or if it's like iron, if it's made out of iron, which some mythologies is supposed to ward off demons. But
Paul would be wearing one of those coexist shirts that has like all the religious symbols forming the letter, just hoping that there might be something there.
A little
there.
Charm bracelet with all the stuff on it.
You get religions that are at war with each other on the same bracelet, hoping that it'll drive away a demon. You know, they all hate you. They all hate you. I promise.
This is like Vikings. Because I think even Rollo, the historical Rollo, when he was buried, he had like Christian rites as well as the Norse rites done at the same time, just to guarantee him.
Got
to
cover your bases.
Both places.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it won't hurt.
Okay, so Castle Grayskull goes on to say, why did Ruby not want the Deadite to finish what he was saying? Do you think it was going to reveal something to the cop that she didn't want her to hear? Also, still on the fence if Ruby is acting as a goodie or a baddie.
Well, we kind of covered that earlier in the episode with our speculations about what the Deadite could have said. Because the Deadites still have the power to talk once the head's been decapitated. They don't ever really seem to say much of importance after the heads get decapitated, but they still talk. So, you know, I remember Henrietta was just like, I'll swallow your soul, I'll swallow your soul. He tells her, swallow this. And then this one's just parroting what Fisher had said. So I don't know, maybe there's something to it. Maybe they have a limited capacity for speech after the severing is done. But it really did seem to me like she was preventing it from saying something. It could just be that she was tired of hearing it talk, like Em said. That's just as feasible. But my gut feeling when I saw it the first time is that it was about to divulge some information that Ruby didn't feel quite comfortable having out there yet.
Then you changed your mind on a second viewing.
Right, and I changed my mind on the second viewing because I figured out that the head could still talk. Well, not figured out, but I was reminded that the head could still talk. So I'm on the fence about this one. If If, in fact, the Deadites have full speech capacity when the head is severed, then it doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? It could have just said whatever it needed to say, and then Fisher would have heard it. Whatever good that would have done the Deadite, I don't know. Or just to taunt Ruby. But otherwise, I'm not really sure. This one's up in the air.
I think Ruby's hiding something. I'm still not convinced she's a goody. She might be evil.
Yeah, I'm nowhere near convinced that she's just a misguided goody, because that's what I initially thought her character was going to be. Now I think that there's other facets to her.
I don't know why. I am convinced she's a misguided goody, but I don't have any evidence to back it up.
If you want to think she's a Xena, that's all right.
Maybe that's what it is.
You're going with Lucretia?
Lucretia.
All right.
So going back to Castle Grey's letter here, he says, "The hand... This confirms that Ruby went to the cabin where the knife and the hand were. Let's hope we see Ruby discover what was left of in the cabin in a flashback. That would be sweet."
Yeah, that would be awesome. When I don't know if they have the rights to Evil Dead 2.
I think it's just Army of Darkness they don't have the rights to.
Yeah, because didn't they show stuff from Evil Dead 2 already in the first?
Did they?
In the was second it, episode? Was it both?
Well, the fact that they have the hand, doesn't that
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, Evil you're Dead right. 2? Duh. There you go. Yeah, they have the hand so they can do it.
When Ash had his eyes sewn up, that was really creepy, but also very cool effect. And the things that were surrounding him had his clothes on and were only touching him with their left hands, which I would suspect are his own demons. I watched it again, Castle Grayskull, and, it did at first seem like it actually looked like they were touching with their right hands. And then I did notice there was a left hand involved too, but I don't know. Maybe you guys can.
Maybe they were trying to hit him with a chainsaw that doesn't really exist. You know, they think it's attached.
Yeah, they were some pretty slow demons.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, just walking around, ooh.
Well, I think they were supposed to be representations of him not fulfilling his potential, and so there's a lack of initiative, so they just shamble around and they don't really do anything. They're just moving in place, which is Ash's life before he embarked on this adventure.
He's his own worst enemy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that.
In his acid trip, it looks like he regressed all the memories of Linda as a way of coping with killing her and never thought about it in 30 years.
Well, I mean, he's an alcoholic, you know, I mean, I take it with the stuff that he does being an alcoholic and smoking weed and doing other drugs that, you know, he's already, with everything else that he's dealt with, I don't think he's thought too much of it just because he's repressing it by doing all these acts, you know, and he's never even progressed in his own life.
So Grayskull's saying that he thinks that he's repressing that memory?
I mean, he's not saying that he's repressing, it's just that he doesn't think about it to deal with what he had to do.
At least for the past 30 years, he hasn't thought about it.
Well, it depends, really. I guess my opinion on that hinges on what were these... I took that whole march of memories going past as like all of the things that he remembered the most prominently from his past.
Right,
so
from that point on.
The killing of Linda was, you know, something that's in the forefront of his mind. He probably avoids thinking about it as much as possible because he has some form of, like, demonic PTSD.
Well, everything else was all kind of, like, escapism type stuff, too, right?
Yeah.
But, or some of it came before because you had the cartoons, which was funny. When I was watching it, I was wearing my Felix the Cat shirt underneath my Ash sweatshirt.
Yeah, that's a hell of a coincidence.
That's
what
awesome.
What does M know and Ruby know that we don't know?
Okay, he goes on to say, has Kelly been replaced by the demon? When she struck it with the book, maybe he done a little switcheroo and Kelly is now in hell trapped. More than likely, though, she possessed, and this was a way for the demon to smuggle his way inside the perimeter of the Brujo uncle's place to get at Ash. Remember, the demon says he knows all, so that would mean he knows about the protection of the uncle's place and knew that Ash and the wolf pack would go there.
Huh. That's a good question. I think what happened, I don't think Kelly's anywhere else but inside Kelly's head, and she's...
I agree.
It's kind of like a standard possession trope, that a shred of the demon went into her when she hit it with the book. Most of it went back to hell, and a little bit, just enough to kind of grow inside of her, stayed around, and now it's kind of gained the upper hand for the time being.
And that's smart. That would explain how the Brujo doesn't sense him, because it's only a little piece of the demon that's taking control of her.
Right. So it's at that point, it was probably like 75% Kelly, 25% demon. Mm-hmm. And then it switched around whenever she went to Ash's bedroom.
Exactly.
In his trip, Eli, or Brujo, says you have to bury the book deep in the place where you got it. So maybe Ash and the group has to go back to the cabin to destroy the book. That would be awesome.
Definitely. That is in the cards. It has to be after that. I mean, if he can recover the book from, it was a trip, so it didn't really happen. But I was going to say, if he could recover the recover the book from the pristine waters off the coast of Jacksonville, Florida, then he'll be all right.
Do you guys think that's going to be like the episode 10 finale? Like it's going to involve the cabin, or do you think it's going to happen in like the next two episodes?
Oh, shit, the way as fast as this thing's going, who knows? I think it'll be the finale, personally. But, I mean, they're not slowing down for anything.
So. Yeah, because I would say next two episodes, just because of how fast everything's going. But
I would go with the finale because they would have to, they could get there easily enough because they're still in the state, right? But I think they would have to do some Rocky-esque preparation to get there because they would have to know, or he would know, what's facing them when they get there.
Yeah, plus they have to dispatch of the demon, figure out Ash could be completely knocked out for a whole episode. I mean, we've got a little bit of a mess to deal with from this episode, so not next episode, maybe the one after that. And then you've got Ruby and them coming too. Do they show up at Kramer Jr.'s uncle's house?
Well, I agree, because I said the next two episodes. So next episode, they're going to be dealing with stuff. We're going to see Ruby and Fisher on their little, like, adventure coming towards them. And then the following episode is going to be both groups. Yeah. Both groups head into the cabin, and they're going to converge there together. There's going to be,
be awesome.
I could totally see that happening, but I don't think that will happen until 9 or 10. That's my guess. That's my.
So. We're going to end Castle Grayskull's letter. He says, that's all my thoughts this week. Also, thanks for the nickname.
No problem.
And he said, I forgot to put this in. I give this episode probably 8 out of 10. So he means 8 out of 10.
Demonically possessed Lori dolls.
Little Lori demonic dolls.
Lori dolls. So Jaw Bernardi wasn't able to write in, but he did send us a package of donuts, and that's related to another podcast, but it was a very cool gift. And thank you, John Bernardi. We just wanted to give you a shout out about that.
That was awesome. And the notes that you wrote in there had both of us laughing. That was really, really special. Thank you so much for doing that. That was really thoughtful.
All right. So if you want to support this podcast, please head over to our website at www.noship.net. Click on our support page, and it will guide you to the various ways you can support us. It'd be great if you left us a review. We do have some new reviews. I think I know who Koala Han is. If you're hoping to win the beer stein, you need to let us know for sure who you are so we can give you the points. If you've written a review and you are going for the beer stein, please go to our contact page, or you can go directly to our Gmail account, which is noshipnetwork@gmail.com.
And hopefully by episode 6, I should have it up on Twitter so everybody can see what it's going to look like.
And we are doing commission podcasts. We actually have already a commission podcast purchase, which is going to come out in the very near future, as well as two episodes of a particular show. So keep an eye out for that and check it out.
I'm actually really excited about it. So,
One thing I wanted to mention, didn't Castle Grayskull have a question about the Evil Dead and Evil Dead?
That's right. Castle Grayskull had asked on Twitter, why is it Ash versus Evil Dead and not Ash versus the Evil Dead?
Well, it's one of those things, to the best of my knowledge, because you look at the original movie, it was called Evil Dead. The second movie was called Evil Dead 2, and then you had Army of Darkness. So there's no thes in there anywhere. So calling it Ash versus Evil Dead, while it's a little bit grammatically incorrect, I would say, it's thematically consistent. So, it would be weird to add the in there. So it's just like Ash versus Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Which I add the anyway whenever I talk about it with people. So,
and I understand asking because I have to type it a lot for all the things I do for the podcast. And I always pause after verses. I'm like, wait, it's not the, because I want to type the, but I know it's not correct.
So it's, so. you stumble over the grammar of it every time you say it, but thematically, it stays consistent with all the movies. Mm-hmm. So I believe that's the reason why they did it. Or Sam Raimi just likes to torture everybody and makes it a tongue twister every time you say it.
Probably that.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. Come visit us again next week, and we'll do it all over again. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I'm your host, Em. Sleep tight. Don't let the deadites bite.